Welcome, everybody. Good to have you with us.
Welcome to Lincoln on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news, all related to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Transformational Mortgage Solutions. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. Now, here's your host of Lincoln on Lending, David Lincoln.
Let's begin.
Welcome, everybody. Hope you survived the Thanksgiving feast. I was just talking about family dynamics, and so fortunate to have a great family and very blessed by it. I have a new son-in-law, and I was just so excited about that and spending some time with him again. It's fun. Hope you had a great time with your family wherever you are at. You know how many Zoom meetings were going on Thanksgiving? We had two back-to-back Zoom meetings with family. It's great that they took off some of the restrictions on whether you have a license or not, you got the paid version or not, but they gave everyone and all this abundance of time. So it was really good. We got to see family and talk. But I'm finding the importance of having the agenda for these meetings. They're staring after 10 minutes going, so we haven't talked in a while. Let's do. And it was just awkward. And then realizing how important preparation is. How do you deal with the pandemic? How do you deal with Thanksgiving? But it was a good holiday, and I hope you had a great one. Again, this is Monday, November 30th. I hope this podcast has been a blessing to you. We enjoy bringing it to you. Again, it's created by mortgage professionals. It is for mortgage professionals. Again, our commitment is to bring you timely information in an audio format. Today's hot topic, we have Cindy Danko. Cindy is the Vice President and Credit Risk Policy for Fannie Mae's Single Family Risk Management Team. And we're talking about Fannie Mae's response to the COVID-19 pandemic, especially in the area of servicing. She's got one of the most impressive backgrounds there at Fannie Mae. And you're really going to enjoy this interview. So be sure to stay tuned all the way to the hot topic segment after we get done with the industry update. I want to say a special thank you to the folks at Industry Syndicate. We're proud to be a part of the Syndicate. They do a great job with us. And also, thank you to all of our sponsors, the MBA, Mortgage Bankers Association of America. We had Marina Walsh on September 14th talking about the cost of originations. Be sure to check that out. Also, when you're on their website, go sign up for the Mortgage Action Alliance. Download it on your app to have your voice heard in Washington, D.C. And you do not have to be a member of the MBA, although you should be. Also, a special thank you to Finastra, one of our longstanding partners and sponsors for years. They have their Fusion Mortgage Bot Solution, experiencing the power of fully integrated approach to mortgage lending that simplifies the borrowing experience and streamlines the process. Listen to August 24th. Steve Hope was on as our guest. Also, Lenders One. We had Justin DeMolia on as a guest. Real pleased to be a part of the Lenders One, as well as the Mortgage Collaborative. Both these co-ops bring you competitive advantages, as well as CMLA. We had Michael Jones on September 21st. Listen to that podcast. Also, Indicom. So thrilled to have the partnership with Indicom. They do a great job with their technology and their mortgage expertise. Indicom provides automation, outsourcing, and compliance solutions to the mortgage industry. Be sure to check out that podcast on August 31st. Love the folks at Indicom. Alice's old employer, and they're doing so much with their technology. Check it out. Incelerate, which helps lenders close more loans, radically changing the lender's communication process. We had Josh Friend on August 17th. Listen to that podcast. And then also AI Assist, and it's an artificial intelligence that helps you reach borrowers. Got to start using more in AI. It's going to be the competitive advantage. It can make a big difference. And we need to get them on and do another podcast with them. Get Roman Benfield on. Great company, and what they're doing is amazing. Also, Celebrity Home Loans. They're growing again through acquisition. Check them out. As well as Innovian. Ted Kramer and that team, they do an amazing job of optimizing your mortgage executions. We're going to have Ted on in an upcoming podcast. Also, Mobility RE and Modix are the two that help you recruit. Knowledge Group is a learning management system. Say thank you to all of our sponsors, especially to Alice, Alan, and Matt for their contributions each and every week. Let's get over to this week's macro view of the markets with Les Parker. Les?
TM Spotlight Soundbites is brought to you by PowerSeller, making hedging easy.
Unconventionally, U.S. will grow unconventionally. The crashing U.S. dollar lifts commodities and sends rates higher. Despite worries about the U.S. election fraud, stocks and bonds anticipate divided U.S. government, a return to Obama's slow growth, and capitulation to China. The global bond bears see mountains of debt, unconventional recovery, and uneven inflation. Under COVID-19's influence, subsets of GDP and CPI clusters in ways never seen, which creates disparate impact on people and places. The U.S. will grow unconventionally. These views are my own. Want more? Go to tmspotlight.com.
Yeah, when you're there, be sure to sign up for Les's newsletter, and you can get it free if you put in power for Power Seller. Very good. Matt Graham's here with us to give us an update on what's actually happening real time in the markets. Gosh, Matt, looking at this. This is very good. The UMBS, nice, looking real pretty.
Yeah, it's nice to see UMBS 1.5 coupons firing on all cylinders, as much as they have anyway. Good stuff. And as always, though, the underlying guidance going to come from the broader bond market. There's a lot of disconnection, of course, between how treasuries are moving. And that's been good. That's been disconnection in our favor almost exclusively. And that is payback for treasuries sticking it to the mortgage market back in March. Interesting for the bond market, as can always be the case on Thanksgiving weeks. You never really know what to expect. And even if something interesting happens or looks like it's happening, you never really know if it's going to stick around in the following weeks. Fortunately, last week was pretty boring. You could have read it either way. Things were a little bit weaker to start. There was a little bit of concern as to whether that might be a reversal of a friendly trend that we had over the previous 2 weeks. But really, that friendly trend in itself was a reversal from a negative bounce caused by Pfizer's vaccine news. I don't know if you remember, Dave, that was that Monday where yields shot up just extraordinarily in one day, right after that Pfizer vaccine was announced. Put a line in the sand saying, okay, this is how much bonds are going to sell off when they're as afraid as they're going to be of vaccines. And everything since then has been calming down. We even had Moderna vaccine news come out in several installments, and we did not see bonds react in nearly as negative a way. And that actually kicked off trading this week as well, with their final trial results looking still just as good as when they first started talking about the stuff, but more on that in a second. So last week, really uneventful from an economic data standpoint. We did have a markets version of PMI, but the important PMIs are coming up this week. Inflation stayed steady, 1.4 on core PCE. Fed meeting minutes, those were fairly interesting. The Fed cannot stop talking about how they're going to adjust their bond buying plan. And it has markets in a frenzy, and frenzy is a relative term, not a real frenzy, but the bond aficionados are wondering, is the Fed going to update its weighted average maturities in this upcoming meeting? And the Fed hasn't really given a clear indication of that. And just to rewind and talk about what we're actually talking about here, weighted average maturity, it just refers to the balance of the bonds that the Fed holds. So they could spend however many billions of dollars a month and just buy 2-year treasuries or shorter. That's only going to give them 2 years of duration exposure. And it's only going to mean that the Fed is soaking up that inventory for those 2 years. But if they bought 10, 20, 30-year bonds, now they are soaking up a lot more bond buying demand for a longer period of time, or they're holding that money, carrying that capital. So if they redo that balance and say they're going to buy more longer-term debt, that is generally considered to be beneficial for rate. The average bond market participant thinks that's probably coming, but it's not much better than 50-50 right now. If Congress were to come together and put some fiscal package on the table before the middle of December, then you would probably see the Fed maybe hold off and see what the fiscal impact would be. But if the economic data is weak between now and then, and there's no fiscal stimulus, then it is a higher probability that the Fed will do at least something, if not simply say, hey guys, you can count on us doing this weighted average maturity adjustment in the next meeting. So they'll probably try to get some mileage out of verbiage if they can, which they always do. If you had to pick, is the Fed erring on the side of being friendly or unfriendly? They're definitely erring on the side of being friendly. So nobody's really ruling out that that could come. As far as the data that could factor into that decision, this week is an important one because, as is the case for any first week of the month, we have a concentration of important economic data. Some of it already came out this morning with Chicago PMI 58.2 versus 59. That's weaker than expected, but it's still expansionary, still indicating growth. Similar story if the rest of the week's data comes in as expected. ISM manufacturing tomorrow, big report, forecast at 58 versus 59.3 previously. So that would be growth, but it would be less than last time. ADP employment is calling for an uptick in job creation to 410,000 from 365. But contrast that to NFP, non-farm payrolls, calling for a bit of a drop from 638 to 500. None of that's really material because economists are still feeling out where the labor market situation is going to level off once we've had time to see what the post-vaccine economy looks like. And you can always tune in every first Friday of the month. MBS Live is always a buzz in the live chat as we're trying to take last minute betting odds on where NFP will come in. And you can see it pop in real time and see markets react in real time if they're going to. And as always, the Lickin' listeners can get a double time free trial with no credit card requirement by using LOL when they go to mbslive.net and create a trial account.
Yeah, good job. Also looking today, the pending home sales numbers came out. This one is projected to be negative 2.2. Came in at a negative 1.1, so half of the negativity is there, so I guess that's a good thing.
When that stuff comes out weaker than expected, then the headlines focus on home sales dropping or being weaker than expected. And people who know me know I'm the very last person that's going to be a cheerleader for the real estate industry just because my clients are massive stakeholders in it. I like to tell it like it is, and that is still a freaking outstanding pending home sales number. It's a little bit less than it was last time, but last time was the highest in 14 years. So yeah, a little bit of shine has come off it, but it's still very shiny.
I think we're going to see a real strong purchase market, and the purchase MBA's purchase index, again, 314.6. So anyway, a lot of good stuff on here. Matt, thank you so much for being here each and every week. MBSLive.net. Check it out. Alice, who is the CMB Vice President of Education and Training at Union Home Mortgage, with this week's legislative update.
Things were a little quiet last week, but what did come out actually is related to banks. I know we have a lot of lender listeners, but I think we do got a lot of bank folks out there too. And one of the interesting things that came out was this notice of proposed rulemaking by the OCC. So for those of you who aren't familiar, the OCC regulates all our national banks and really anybody who's like a savings associations. They're technically like an independent part of the Treasury. So with this proposed rule, comment period is open until January 4th. And with the title, Fair Access to Financial Services, a lot of folks are thinking, we already have fair lending. We already have the Equal Credit Opportunity Act. What could possibly still be the need to have another layer of fair lending? And so I wanted to read about this because take it a little bit deeper to understand. For the larger banks, there's a commercial side to this that I think does impact all of us. And really what they're looking for in this proposed rule, it actually is a piece of Dodd-Frank. So 10 years later, still trying to get the whole thing put together. And the OCC actually came out and gave some examples in this of where a bank has had a policy for an entire particular financial service provider, for example. They may say in 2014, there were banks refusing to provide financial services to an entire category of money services businesses, which would be the type of check cashing places that you might find more in an inner city, and therefore hurting inner city lending as a whole. Now, the rule is not saying we have to lend or that they have to provide funds for companies who don't qualify. Obviously, the company has to be sound, but it's the concept that you can't discount an entire category in a particular region. They will be required under this proposed rule to look at each individual entity and determine on its own merit if it is eligible or not eligible. It was interesting as far as the regional impact that this can have. They gave several examples of cases of where larger banks were excluding certain types of foreign financial institutions and not looking at individual cases. So we'll watch this because I think it's interesting to hopefully wrap up Dodd-Frank, but also just the impact to the markets and see how the banks react to it. And then last but not least, Dave, I hope everybody saw the increase in our loan amounts that we will get starting soon here. I'm sure a lot of companies are going to implement that here for applications coming up because its impact affects loans once they're delivered to Fannie and Freddie. So a lot of companies are going to allow taking applications and closing them early who have the ability to deal direct with the agencies. Or if you're a correspondent, you have an investor who will let you deliver them before the end of the year. Great new loan amounts. Nice big increase this year.
Yeah, nice big increase. Yeah. It's going to help volumes overall, and it's going to help support home appreciation we've had. So we keep them in the conforming space and not into the jumbo space. Alice, good job. Are there any major changes with Fannie and Freddie that you've noticed? Is one of the questions that came in. They had heard that there were some things coming down.
I think the biggest thing right now that most lenders are dealing with is just the change with the self-employed borrowers and changing from the two-month bank statement to the three-month bank statement analysis. We talked a little bit about that last week. That goes into effect December 14th. And I think, especially on the origination side, trying to communicate to borrowers effectively, here's what we're going to need. And finding that when it gets to underwriting, the underwriter looked at it differently and wants some more backup for what is going on with the income and expense trends. But as far as actual change in the risk model, any kind of major change, we haven't heard that there's any major change along that line.
I could jump in real quick if you want, Dave.
Yeah,
I had
sure.
Good on that. There was definitely some buzz on the site last week based on the potential for the capital framework. And there was speculation that was going to lead to yet more increased fees, such as the recent adverse market fee. Haven't seen anything official or anything confirmed, and I don't necessarily think there's any reason to panic, but nonetheless, people are worried about that with everything that is up in the air with respect to Mnuchin signing off on Calabria's plan to try to take the GSEs private before Biden gets in office, if Biden gets in office. But anyway, that's really the big to-do, is that whole privatization thing, and will there be more fees to come as a result?
Yep.
That's a great point. Yeah, that it was more on that side of it as opposed to underwriting. My brain went to underwriting.
Yep, I picked it up off of MBS Live, and that's why I was asking. Alice, thank you so much for being here and always bringing us meaningful, important perspective. You are loved by our audience, Alice.
Thank you.
Alan Pollock has also dialed in to join us with this week's weekly tech update. Alan?
Licken. What's happening? How could we start today without some turkey facts? I think we did this last year as well. There were 100,000 questions asked by the Butterball Turkey Hotline in 2019. Of course, we don't have the 2020 stats yet. And Dave, my question for you is, what do you think America's favorite Thanksgiving dish was? And we're talking about data and analytics here. That's why it's relevant, by the way. Turkey, stuffing, pumpkin pie, mashed potatoes, sweet potatoes, or cranberry sauce. Where do you think we landed? 100,000 people.
Pumpkin pie. We always go for the desserts.
All right. Pumpkin pie ranked number 3. The order is actually what I gave. It's turkey, 39%, 23% stuffing, 12% pumpkin pie, 9% mashed potatoes, 6% sweet potatoes, 3% cranberry sauce. But anyways, there were $552 million estimated that was spent on turkeys last year. So let's move on to mortgage news. Lots of cool stuff going on. If you remember, we said this week we're going to talk about how to deal with tech people, HTDWTP. Uh-huh. We should get a hat made, David, with a little LOL insignia on it with the HTDWTP, because this is a big one. Let's talk about a couple things in the news, and then we're going to get into how to deal with tech people. One of our favorite technology solutions out there, Mortgage Coach. And as we know, they have the total cost analysis. They just increased their platform to have the Arch MI integration, which is really interesting, because as you look to create that total cost analysis, they will then obviously have that information, which is much better. And they've got a big community as well. People love to collaborate. And we'll talk about that when we talk about some of the tech people. Blend, I love this part of the news. Blend has expanded. As we know, they've been getting into banking, right? They had point of sale technology. They just launched, obviously, the white labeling of their system, which is important for financial institutions. But now they've got personal loans, credit cards, and vehicle loans. This is where we are going. If you're a financial institution listening to this podcast, you have already thought about, or you're trying to figure out how to work with the behemoth of your core banking platform and how to implement the very high technology agile solutions into your technology stack. Blend's not the only one, but in today's news, they are. And I got to put my hat off to them. This is great news. One experience, all focused on the borrower, focused on getting the right data, focused on the data moving through the transition process. Great news event for Blend. You want to check it out. David, if you have any friends that want to know what's going on with tech solutions, right? At least ones that have joined the Innovative Digital Mortgage Technology Solutions Demo Day. It's a Housing Wire event. It's on December 14th. It's a half-day format. It's digital. You can join whenever you want. I suggest going because it's that last shot that different companies have this year to sort of give off what the demos are and what they're doing prior to everything kicking off next year, that people know plans are being made. So it's digital on demand. You go when you want. But check it out. There's going to be some great folks in there. Now, getting high tech. Florida Capital Bank has partnered with a company that just raised $125,000 in their first day of seed round funding. Now, you heard me right, seed round funding. It's a fintech provider. It's called BMortgage App. And get this, they say that they've got the only mobile app completely originated by the borrower. The database is aligned for the borrower. It's going to be in blockchain, not just the store data, but the validate and verify data. They just launched version one of this app for Florida Capital Bank. It's connected to Optimal Blue. So it takes a bunch of data, returns a price. And the goal is within the next 12 months, they want a 3-minute fully automated mortgage completely driven by the borrower without the loan officer. Well, you can't get rid of the LO. You guys always talk about that. I agree. I'm just telling you what they said. So check it out. It is Florida Capital Bank partnered with BMortgage App. All right, let's get into the fun stuff. So how do I deal with tech people? I found a great article on Forbes. It's two parts. Part of it is without the Forbes article. We can post it for anyone that wants to visit. We have to remember that skills have a shelf life. You can't bring in folks and just expect them to learn everything. They've got to be able to update their careers and update their knowledge. And so do you. You have to realize that the technology empowering to make our software development teams and our technical staff superheroes, we've got to allow them to expand their knowledge. And communication is the biggest piece. Data is king. Understanding data and working with your tech team, giving them data, sharing data, getting access to data. These are things that keep technology people really happy. But what's most important for tech people? They don't just want a programming job. They want to join a mission. So if you can lead in the management style with a mission, you have the ability to gain the acceptance and the adoption into your organization. Culture that you create with that mission is so critical. There are three core areas that are important when thinking about culture. And we've all heard about this, right? Cultivating community. Programmers and technology staff, they want to be part of the rest of the company. They don't want to hear that everyone's going to conferences and everyone's seeing these tech solutions and they never see anything. The culture should be inclusive, and we need to be able to celebrate their individuality. Oftentimes, people think the programmers are locked in the closet, or the technical staff and technical project managers, their job is just to dot I's and cross T's. That's not the case. We need to celebrate their successes with the whole organization, but we also need to embrace possibility. Technology people want to go off the deep end sometimes. You've heard people, they have one-day innovation days. They've got come up with the best one and implement it in a test site. Let's see what it will look like. Those are the kinds of things that technology staff wants to do. Let them know they're part of that bigger picture. And then I've just got two last things, David. Show them what you're working on as an organization. Include them in the vision. We talked about that a moment ago, but that's what they're interested in. They want to know there's more than just their head down in the code all day or verifying that people are doing their work and they feel like they're just checking off boxes. They want to be part of that vision, that grand plan and what's coming tomorrow. And they want to know where their growth is. Programmers don't want to just be programmers forever. They're quirky. They're unique. Demonstrate a cultural alignment. I can't give you what all those cultural things are today. It's all kinds of things. It's pool tables. It's movie night. It's letting them become part of podcasts. It's all kinds of things. So anyways, hopefully that was some good information for you. Next week, we're going to talk about where's blockchain gone? What have we really done in 2020? And where are we really going in 2021? We've heard about blockchain. That's really important. And your technical staff, right? Your technology folks, make them happy. Get that culture. Let them understand what's going on with blockchain. So you're going to want them to listen next week.
I'm really interested in the blockchain segment next week. I'll be really fascinated, especially when you listen to Brent Chandler at FormFree, how they're using it is going to be fascinating. So that was used actually in our last election and has picked up some of the fraud that's going on out there that's been reported. Very interesting stuff. Alan, good job. Appreciate you being here each and every week.
Thank you, David.
Want to get a hold of Alan? Write him at Alan, A-L-E-N, at TMS-advisors.com. Appreciate him being a part of the podcast and a part of our advisory team, as well as one of the key executives there at Open Close. A busy guy. Folks, that wraps up this week's weekly mortgage update. If you're listening live, stay right here, and we're going to go right into the Hot Topic segment. If you're listening to us on a downloaded basis, just check out the next episode. It flows right into what we're about to listen to for those of us who are listening live. Welcome, everybody. Today's Hot Topic segment, we pre-recorded an episode with Cindy Danko. I'm really excited about this. So without further delay, welcome to the podcast, everybody, and the Hot Topic segment. We have as our special guest, Cindy Danko. Cindy is the Vice President and Credit Risk Policy for Fannie Mae's Single Family Risk Management Team, reporting to the Senior Vice President and Chief Credit Officer for Single Family,
Cindy is accountable for developing policy for selling and servicing activities, the representation and warranties framework, the mortgage and borrower eligibility, underwriting, and the loan management servicing standards and requirements, including loss mitigation. Cindy is also responsible for all aspects of credit risk policy that maintain the risk management processes for the single family business. Previously, Cindy was the Vice President of Risk Management Technology Solutions in Fannie Mae's Single Family Digital Products Division. In that role, she was responsible for managing the company's core risk management applications, including Desktop Underwriter and Collateral Underwriter. Cindy, so good to have you on the podcast.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
I know how busy you all are there at Fannie Mae, and I'm just grateful to have you take a few minutes. And we're focusing, listeners, on the topic of COVID-19. Let's start off by really getting into a discussion. How has Fannie Mae responded to the COVID-19 pandemic?
I certainly appreciate you having me, and you are absolutely right. The pandemic is really living on. And as we think back in March of 2020, when COVID-19 hit the United States and really resulted in the stay-at-home orders, school closures, the widespread business shutdowns across the country, many people experienced a financial hardship and really were left wondering, how am I going to pay my mortgage or my rent next month? And so during this crisis, throughout most of 2020 now, we've been focused on just that and helping Americans stay in their homes, helping our customers stay in business, and making sure that the mortgage and housing markets are strong and open. One thing in particular that we did was we launched Here to Help as part of our commitment to helping those impacted by COVID-19. And that was really in working closely with our regulator, FHFA. We wanted an opportunity to share available resources with homeowners and renters nationwide. So they had one place that they could go to obtain the information they needed to get help. And our goal was really just making sure that they understood all the available options if they did have concerns about paying their mortgage or rent. And so for homeowners, Here to Help is really an online portal that's part of our knowyouroptions.com website that has clear explanations around forbearance, when it may be an option, how to get started, and even what to expect after forbearance once you come out of it. It also provides resources for renters on Know Your Options to understand what rent relief is available and what assistance options are there as you think about your rights as a tenant. So just a couple examples on the resources available. There's videos that explain the steps of forbearance. So it's not just having to read through material, but really having some short, simple, easy to understand videos, fact sheets, and reference numbers to call should you need further help or even counseling assistance, as we have the Disaster Response Network and HUD's approved housing counselors that can help navigate the broader financial challenges that people are facing.
You guys are very busy. I can only imagine all that's been involved in that, the complexities of that, and thinking through all the nuances. But I want to shift over and talking about how have you been supporting servicers?
Yeah, so a lot of work going on with servicers as well, as we know that they play such a key role in helping those homeowners impacted by COVID-19, really helping them navigate the financial challenges of the pandemic. So we did a couple things. We really gathered a lot of feedback and have had a lot of conversations with our servicing partners. And we were able to really understand what challenges they were facing and develop solutions that would help them help homeowners. And so part of the feedback we got allowed us to identify several main areas of interest that would right away be able to help servicers. And we developed what we called a new servicer toolkit. Mm-hmm. And the servicer toolkit is really a collection of resources organized in an easy to use mobile friendly platform, because we're all on the go and really want information at our fingertips. And this servicer toolkit gives everything to servicers, no matter what they're working on, at their fingertips. It includes things like sample scripts to help in conversations with homeowners. Again, letters they can use. There's materials that they can quickly turn into answers to make sure that they're in compliance with existing and new regulations, and even within the guidelines as we think about the Federal CARES Act. Specifically, the areas that were pointed out that we could help the most with included things around mortgage forbearance plans and reporting them, borrower workout options post-forbearance, the details of our new COVID-19 payment deferral option, as well as things around compliance with investor reporting, and then even managing all the additional volume as we think about just working through the pandemic and the toll it's taken.
Wow. Cindy, what sort of resources and help are you offering homeowners and renters?
We've taken a lot of action as we think about helping homeowners and renters, especially those facing a financial hardship. And so some of the specific actions we've taken for the homeowners, for the renters, is around extending eviction protection to multifamily renters. We took action to suspend foreclosures and evictions affecting homeowners. We share on our website tips on homeowners to how to avoid potential foreclosure fraud scams, which that comes out sometimes during these challenges and national emergencies. We announced the new COVID-19 payment deferral option, which was really meant to help homeowners who are ready to resume their monthly mortgage payment following that COVID-19 forbearance.
I'm really interested in the part about hearing reports related to some of the fraud. Are there any schemes that we should be aware of that we should alert some of our seller servicers about that they should be paying particularly close attention to? Is there anything that pops out there?
Yeah, so we really wanted to ensure that should any foreclosure fraud or scam come out, that homeowners would be aware of what that might look like, and we would be able to have tips readily available for them. So nothing in particular, but wanting to make sure that homeowners are prepared should that surface.
Good. I am impressed with what you have done so far as provide scripts to the servicers.
I appreciate that point about the scripts. Also, we did translate some scripts into 5 different languages, really so that we could help servicers and all homeowners that needed it. But the other thing I would say is, as we think about our response to the pandemic and helping homeowners and renters, we also, of course, did that in partnership with lenders and servicers and really came up with and have developed new policies and solutions along the way as we worked with the industry to understand what challenges we were facing. And so since March, in collaboration with Freddie Mac and at the direction of our regulator, FHFA, we've issued more than 60 new lender letters with many policy updates in those lender letters, really to help address the challenges that have been brought on. They spanned both the origination and servicing side of our business. And we were really focused on 2 main areas, right? Provide prudent flexibility to make sure the origination market could continue to function, especially as we think about going into shutdown and school closures and businesses being shut down. We also focused on providing those relief options to homeowners impacted by COVID-19 and making sure that servicers had those tools and toolkit to help them.
That's impressive, the amount of time and energy that's gone into it. But I want to talk about, what have you been hearing from servicers in terms of their inquiries that they've been receiving, the help they're extending, and the resources and relief available by way of Fannie Mae?
So as we think about the crisis, it's really our job to responsibly keep those impacted by the pandemic in their homes, wherever it's possible. It's really our mission and why we exist to serve the housing market, right, in good times as well as in bad times. And we knew that homeowners would need our help. At the beginning of the pandemic, we worked really quickly with our large network of servicers that we work with on a daily basis to ramp up the tools that we had to help those borrowers who were struggling. And as we think about that initial onset, we were able to provide forbearance to single-family borrowers who were reporting that they were experiencing a financial hardship due to COVID-19 for up to 18 months, and at the borrower's request, even extend that for a period of up to a maximum of 12 months. And those efforts back in March and the early days really paid off. In February, we had roughly 6,000 Fannie Mae single-family homeowners or borrowers out of 17 million total in active forbearance. By May, that number had surpassed 1 million. And so implementing forbearance plans at that scale and that rapidly was challenging, but certainly a necessity as we thought about delivering relief quickly to those who needed it most.
Now, Cindy, it's really interesting, all the effort that's gone into the forbearance. Talk a little bit more about what you guys have had to do and plan and respond as it relates to forbearance.
Sure. So I had mentioned how quickly we were able to leverage our forbearance policies to ensure that servicers could respond right away to those borrowers who were impacted financially by COVID-19. And that rapid response helped us to scale the forbearance offering quickly to many borrowers who needed it. And to date, the data shows that those efforts have been successful, right? Of the borrowers who were most clearly affected by the pandemic, they were current on their mortgage payments in February, but became at least 2 months behind at the end of August. More than 96% were able to take advantage of a forbearance plan. And that's just a remarkable statistic when you think about it.
That really is. That's a wonderful statistic. It shows how servicers and consumers have responded to what you've done.
That's exactly right. And I think the data notwithstanding, we know there are still borrowers out there who may be struggling. And so for that reason, we continue to focus on and work with our servicers around educating as many impacted borrowers as possible about those relief options and why we continue to focus on Here to Help and direct borrowers who may need information to our knowyouroptions.com. We're also monitoring those forbearance patterns as the pandemic continues to ensure that as we think about impacted borrowers and mortgage servicers trying to help them, that we can continue to improve our outreach and find solutions that will help as folks come out of forbearance, whether it's a post-forbearance option of reinstatement, a repayment plan, the new COVID payment deferral, or a loan modification that they may need as we think about reducing a borrower's monthly mortgage payment.
Cindy, has Fannie Mae had to adapt or respond to the needs amid the pandemic, either from homeowners or servicers?
We sure did. And you hear a lot of these stories as you talk to people, right, in 2020, with not just everybody, including Fannie Mae, moving to 100% remote working, but also responding to the pandemic and the crisis we were facing at the same time. And so I had mentioned a little bit about that, right, that since March, we had really been working in close partnership with Freddie Mac on both the origination and servicing side and at the direction of FHFA to ensure that we were hearing about the challenges that the industry was facing and that we were coming up with solutions and answers to solve those challenges and that we were continuing to focus on homeowners, ensuring that they were able to stay in their home.
Cindy, forbearance has been a really important option for many. So far, what have you observed in terms of uptake, exit, repayment, that kind of thing? What are you seeing so far?
Yeah, so I think I'd mentioned we saw about 1 million borrowers who went into or took a forbearance who had been impacted financially by COVID-19. That's down to roughly 700,000 homeowners, and we see that number coming down. Many of those homeowners have been able to exit forbearance through one of our offering, most of them through a reinstatement or the new COVID payment deferral solution that's available.
That's an encouraging trend, especially when you see in the nation, we're watching COVID numbers seem to be a spike in many places. What are you anticipating? We're all hoping for the best out of this, Cindy. And how are you guys preparing for what lies ahead and how long this might continue? Any thoughts on how you're prepared to respond to this moving forward?
Yeah, so it's really hard to predict what's going to happen. It's an unprecedented time. I don't think any of us could have predicted back in March that we'd be where we are even just now as we think about November. And so what we're continuing to do is stay focused on our task at hand, which is to ensure that we're helping servicers support homeowners, that we're providing material and information to homeowners so that they are aware of their options, that we have clear, simple, easy-to-use tools for them to find it, and that we also are there for servicers. And again, things like the servicer toolkit, that we continue to enhance that as we respond to the market, and we'll keep focused there and do whatever we have to.
You guys have done a phenomenal job of responding to this. You've helped so many servicers, borrowers, homeowners, renters, the whole group, everybody caught up in this very much of a pandemic tragedy. And it has been a tragedy for some. And you look at how this has impacted families. I really appreciate all that you've done here. Is there anything we want to talk about on credit risk policy that you would like to share with our audience as we get ready to wrap this up, Cindy? I know you have so much going on just with the pandemic, but is there anything else that we should be thinking about?
I think I've covered a lot of it and certainly encourage anyone who needs it to leverage this new servicer toolkit and certainly our Here to Help resources and Know Your Options campaign and website for homeowners should they need it.
Again, what is the address for that website?
It's knowyouroptions.com, all one word. There are lots of resources there for mortgage servicers, homeowners, renters. It's all right there at your fingertips.
Perfect. I encourage our listeners to go out there and access that. Take a look at our show notes, everyone. We'll put these links there for you to take a look at. But most importantly, the best thing to do is avail yourself of what's there and then also pick up the phone and talk to your representative at Fannie Mae. They do a great job of supporting so many of our clients, and we're thrilled to have you here, Cindy. Thank you so much for taking time out of your day.
That's great, Dave. Thanks for having me.
We have had as our special guest today, Cindy Danko, Vice President of Credit Risk Policy for Fannie Mae's Single Family Risk Management Team. So grateful for our partnership with Fannie Mae and grateful for them taking the time to come on our podcast to share this important discussion about how they're responding to the COVID-19 pandemic.
Great interview. Appreciate it. Share this interview with others within the company and also within the industry. Appreciate you doing so. Thank you so much for being here this week. I want to say a special thank you to our sponsors, Finastra, as well as the Community Mortgage Lenders Association of America, Indicom, Incelerate, Ainsworth Advisors, Mobility RE, Modex, and a whole bunch of other sponsors. Again, thanks so much for listening. Have a great week, everybody. Happy post-Thanksgiving and time to get ready for Christmas. Talk to you soon. Have a great week.
You've been listening to Licken on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Licken of Transformational Mortgage Solutions. Join us next week, and thanks for listening.